Hi, this is Clarissa Jacobson from Lunch Ladies, and you're listening to Extra Features Podcast.
226, and I'm Kevin.
And I'm Simon.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Doug.
So what's up, guys? What's new?
I think we have a new segment to release this week, finally. And you have to tell everybody about the spoiler review first, Kevin. Did you forget?
I guess I forgot. Yes. So here's the thing, right? We review movies and we spoil them. So if you don't want movies spoiled, you know, listen to the podcast. I don't know what to say. I don't want to say don't listen to the podcast, but like maybe we'll give you the heads up we're about to spoil a movie before.
I highly doubt it.
Proceed with caution.
Yes, proceed with
caution. If you don't want to hear us discuss a movie that you haven't seen, skip ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want us to blow the end of Once Upon in Hollywood or something like that, then skip to the next one. Like, try to fast forward through.
Sure.
All right. So what's our new segment?
It's a new segment because I figured we need to discuss the news some more. Since I read the news and Doug reads the news and we discuss the news amongst ourselves.
Are we talking about, like, the news, or are we talking about entertainment
news? We're talking about movie news.
Movie news, right on.
Because I love movie news, and I started discussing it with
people. A lot of movie news, so I can probably help accent.
I thought we could do maybe 10 minutes on movie news every episode just for some fun, for something different.
10 minutes? All right.
That's all you got, Kevin.
Maybe five minutes on the Marvel episodes.
Well, that'll be 20 minutes of Kevin talking about it, so don't worry.
Well, all right. So what's new? What's going on?
I'm waiting for Doug.
Well, breaking news right now is that Kevin Hart is hospitalized after a non-fatal car accident in Los Angeles.
Does anybody care? I mean, I'm sorry the guy had to go surgery for a hospital, but I don't like his films. And if it delays him, I'm going to be happy about it.
I mean, I like him as a person.
What about Jumanji?
I hated Jumanji.
Even the – which one? The Welcome to the Jungle?
Yes.
That one was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
I have nothing against Kevin Hart. I mean, he's a pretty big star. He's probably the biggest comedic actor working right now. I mean, his films always do well.
They do.
I feel bad for him. I don't want to see anybody get hurt.
Yeah, it was his buddy driving the car, eh?
Yeah.
So let's all send our thoughts and prayers to Kevin Hart.
Fair enough. I'll give him
thankfully,
that.
It wasn't another Paul Walker situation with someone else driving his own car.
Yeah, but Paul Walker was a bit of a speed demon from everything I read, so I don't want to say he was asking for it, but I don't think he's being very careful.
I mean, his buddy, like, one of his quotes was like, oh, if I die in a car accident, just knowing I had a smile on my face, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go back. You're saying Kevin Hart's the biggest comedian, but nobody knows who Sebastian Martorello is.
You're right.
And I think he is a funny, funny man. I have always thought his stand-up was fabulous. So I think he might be an up-and-rising star in the next few years.
Sebastian who?
Yeah, exactly. My point. He will be.
But are his films making as much money as Kevin Hart's is?
We don't know yet because they only had him. Well, he was in Green Book for one scene. He's going to be in The Irishman. So he's only doing small roles right now. There's nothing starring. So let's give him some time.
Uh-huh.
Come back to me in a year. If you guys still don't know who he is, I'll totally give it to you.
Fair.
We won't remember.
I will.
Okay.
He's probably going to be a – sounds like he's going to be like a what's-his-face.
Who's a what's-his-face? You think so?
Like, you know, like Jim Eskimen. Like, you don't know his name, but you know his face.
Yeah, but I mean, Sebastian just did the MTV Movie Awards or whatever, the awards.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's getting some high-profile gigs.
Did he host it or was he just a presenter?
Host it. He hosted it.
No one else was available.
Well, Amy Schumer's not allowed back, so we'll just go with that. Her last few films stunk.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
Well, another news item was you mentioned The Irishman. They released the runtime of that film, and it will be Martin Scorsese's longest film so far at 210 minutes.
3 hours and 40 minutes, I think.
3.5 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be sitting there with my popcorn going, extra big.
I can't wait. Scorsese's my favorite filmmaker. I'm all for a 3.5 hour movie by him with De Niro and Pesci and Pacino.
Yeah, for sure.
And a popcorn.
People will binge like TV shows, and then they'd be like, a 3.5 hour movie? No way.
Well, that's the problem. I have a lot of issues. I mean, people sit down and spend 8 hours watching House of Cards when that came out was popular. But they can't watch a 3 hour and 40 minute movie? That's ridiculous. I have a big issue with that. I'm with you, Daniel.
Well, all right. So the one difference would be if you're watching binging a TV show at home, you can get up and go to the bathroom very easily and you can pause it. However, if you go to a 3.5 hour movie in the movie theater without an interruption, without an intermission, at some point you're going to miss part of the movie.
There must be an intermission. They had one during Quentin Tarantino's long movie. I can't not Django, the one after that. And I forgot. Oh,
Hateful Eight.
That had an intermission.
Yeah, but for the Irishman, it doesn't really apply since it's a Netflix show, huh?
Well, isn't it getting a release of some kind in 2000?
Yeah, in like New York, maybe.
In L.A., we'll have one for sure for Oscar contention. There's no way this thing's not getting a release.
It'll get the same release that Roma got. It'll start off in New York and L.A. and then expand as the weeks go on.
Yeah.
Doug, being a New York State resident...
Well, New Jersey. I'm New York adjacent.
Okay. Do you go to New York to see these films?
I have not in a long time. I think the only time I went to New York specifically to see a movie was Adaptation, the Spike Jonze Nicolas Cage film.
I was a few years ago.
2000.
Yeah.
Oh wow. But more importantly, do you go to New York to watch the Yankees?
Yes, I do.
And one further question, Doug, since we have you here. What theater do you attend? Are you an AMC, Lowell's, or Regal or something?
Whichever one. Normally AMC, because that's the closest to me, but I'll go to any of them.
So you don't have a preference, like because you didn't buy the AMC loyalty card then?
I do have the loyalty card just because I go so much with my family that getting discount on tickets is nice.
But you don't have the pass that you get so many movies a month.
No, I haven't done that one.
Because we don't have one of those here, which really bugs me, because I would love to have one of those, because I think it would promote going to me. Because I only really have two theater options. One, I hate. The seats are uncomfortable. I can't see movies there anymore. And I have a really nice theater, but they don't do any loyalty. It's not even a loyalty card. So it kind of annoys me. So continuing on, your third thing there, Doug?
Well, probably the biggest movie news since last we spoke was the Marvel-Sony negotiations between Spider-Man breaking down and Spider-Man leaving the MCU.
Yeah, which is huge for me, because I really enjoyed Spider-Man, the MCU. But
yeah, I think he's awesome in the MCU, but I also this past week rewatched Into the Spider-Verse, and I can honestly say I think that's the best Spider-Man movie that's been made so far.
I agree.
Yeah. So there's two ways to look at this Sony thing, okay? One, they're still negotiating. So nothing's final. So I think they're still in talks, although it doesn't look like it's going to happen. The other thing, too, is that, I mean, Sony wants to do Spider-Man and Venom. They want to do live action Into the Spider-Verse. So I can understand why they want to do it. I mean, the original deal with Marvel was Marvel got 5%, I believe, of the initial weekend gross. And they could use Spider-Man in their movies, like Avengers, and not have to pay Sony for that usage. So
they
now that
got all the merchandising, I think, too. They got
Marvel owns Spider-Man and comics and all the publishing side of things. So Sony gets nothing from merchandise on Spider-Man stuff and Venom, the same thing. So essentially, Disney wanted 50% if Kevin Feige was going to produce it, which is a huge ask, a huge jump from 5%. But it doesn't seem like there was any middle ground to negotiate. So I'm sure that something will happen in between. I know that Disney has a lot for Feige to do with all the Disney shows and the Marvel movies that are coming up. So maybe not having him as the producer on Spider-Man isn't the end of the world. But he certainly laid a template for everything. They're going to use the same cast, same actor, same director. So I don't know. I don't see it's a huge loss all around. I think it's disappointing. I do think that perhaps they could work out another deal where maybe Spider-Man is in the MCU, but Feige isn't the executive producer on the Spider-Man films. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, it'd suck if he left the MCU, but I'd still be excited to see what Sony does with him, I guess. Mm-hmm. And speaking about the shows, they're still allowed to use him in their animated TV shows because they're still trying to use him in the What If show, right?
And technically, since Disney has Disney Plus, I wonder if they could use Spider-Man on Disney Plus.
Yeah, that's what I was reading. That they could still use him on animated TV shows.
He'll appear on What If, I'm sure, whenever that airs. So perhaps
there was also the other deal announced recently with Miller and Lord getting a bunch of money to create Spider-Man based TV shows for Sony.
Mm.
Oh, so that I think they're looking at combos of live action and animated, probably spinning out of Into the Spider-Verse with a bunch of different spider people getting their own TV shows.
Now, I don't know if they can do that, though, really.
Yeah, because I just thought Sony only owned the film rights, so that's just a bit,
yeah.
Like, the line, that's because I don't know legal stuff. So that's
I mean, perhaps about. That's the arrangement. Perhaps if you continue a Marvel-Sony deal where they can create a Spider-Verse TV show with Lord and Miller, and then maybe MCU gets to use Spider-Man in some of their films, just not producing the main ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it could be that Disney made the deal with Lord and Miller too.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Aside from the Lord.
Yes.
Because before all this, I'll be honest, I forgot that Sony owned Spider-Man.
Hmm.
I was just like, oh yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah, well, back when Marvel was in bankruptcy court, they sold a lot of film rights to, you know, to get money. Oh. So they sold Spider-Man. And at that point, who would have believed a live-action Spider-Man movie would ever actually exist and make such big money? You know, I mean, I'm sure that Stan probably thought so, but, like, and they did the same thing with Fantastic Four and Ghost Rider and Hulk and Namor and X-Men. All these other big properties were snatched up by film companies.
Yeah.
Like, someone asked me on my wall when they announced the She-Hulk show. At one point, someone had optioned the rights to a She-Hulk movie and announced that Brigitte Nielsen would be playing the part.
That's a long time ago, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That was like 89. That was Schwarzenegger's old girlfriend, I guess, or Stallone's old girlfriend. She was Red Sonja in the Red Sonja movie.
Yes, I know.
She was in Beverly Hills Cop as well.
Two,
I think. So, yeah. Anyway, who knows where these things change hands. If Sony were to be purchased, Marvel will get the Spider-Man rights back.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not transferable to new owners.
Interesting.
That was one of the things that I learned.
That's interesting.
Oh. Mm. So Sony has the rights for ever, basically.
As long as Sony continues, and Sony Studios is up for sale. So if someone were to buy Sony, I don't think they would ever approve a Disney purchase of Sony. But,
yeah. Oops, sorry.
That's okay.
I was silent that canary.
Something happened there. I think so. Early warning system. All right. Well, any other news? Any other?
No, that's it. Up? That's your 10 minutes. You're already over. Move on.
Oh.
All right. See, we knew we were going to go over if we ever talked about Marvel.
If you bring Marvel up, I can't stop talking about it. Sorry.
It's all good. Continuing on, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Are we starting with that one or starting with Hobbs and Shaw? Okay, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, sorry. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, Emil Hirsch, Margaret Qualley, Timothy Oliphant, Austin Butler, Bruce Dern, Al Pacino.
All right, I love this movie. This was awesome. This is probably my favorite movie of the year after Endgame so far. I thought everything about it was fantastic. I love Leo. I love Brad Pitt. I loved all the little, you know, love letters to old Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact, a lot of people were talking about the fact that Brad Pitt drives his car around, but that's all you do in L.A. You have to drive a car everywhere to get around.
That is correct.
And it's part of the life. And I thought, just a funny look. I mean, I don't know about the historical accuracy, all that stuff with Bruce Lee that's controversial. I enjoyed that scene. I thought it was a fun scene.
That scene is hysterical.
Yeah, I thought he was great.
Margot Robbie, I mean, the film itself is kind of like, what if Quentin's in love with Sharon Tate and he wants her to live? So this is basically, you know, he's kind of fascinated by her through Margot Robbie, and but there's not a lot of meat to that part.
Nope, none.
Oh, she does. Only the performer that probably, out of the big three, that wouldn't get, like, Oscar recognition. There's just not a lot to do in there.
And the ending, I mean, God, the ending is, spoiler alert, I read an article about Quentin's films. So there's the really real universe, which is where Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown take, not Jackie Brown, but some of the other films take place. Hateful Eight. And then there's the Elmore Leonard universe, which is where Jackie Brown takes place. And then there's the filmic universe that the people in the really real universe will watch, like the movies that they would watch and the actors that they would know. And so, like, Once Upon a Time and Inglourious Basterds are basically movies that would exist in the Pulp Fiction universe. Like, that's what they might go see at a movie theater.
Oh.
Okay, so.
Okay.
So they're like wish fulfillment stories.
Yeah.
Of like, something major in our history has changed to suit Quentin's whims or his belief of this needs to be in it, like killing Hitler 3 years early in France in a movie theater. Yeah. And ending the war early. That's a Quentin wish fulfillment moment. And I think taking revenge on the Manson family is that his moment in this movie. I mean, we've got 3 hours of setup of Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, two characters that are fictional, intersecting with our real universe and being a roadblock to the Manson family.
Yeah.
And lots of setups like the film he does with the war criminal, basically he's supposed to be playing the Brad Pitt character from Inglourious Basterds in that movie when he gets the flamethrower.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? And that's kind of like his truncated version of that, those events. But when he pulls it out of that garage, that's one of the great moments of the year, I think.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
And yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was gonna say I have kind of a differing opinion of this movie. I did not love it like a lot of people did. I think there are some brilliant performances. I think Brad Pitt and Leo were fantastic. Mm-hmm. But the last third, the last part of it, just had way too many Quentin Tarantino-isms that just really bugged the hell out of me. My main gripe is the voiceover out of nowhere. It's not needed. You could tell the story without the voiceover.
But wasn't a voiceover there at the beginning, though, too?
Yes.
Just for that one scene where they explain that Dalton got drunk and couldn't drive. But that was just one line, and it was a throw, and that bugged me at that point, too. Mm. But I think the voiceover could have been done without. I also don't think it needed to be Kurt Russell who did the voiceover because he played a character earlier in the movie. That just bugged the hell out of me.
Okay.
Overall, though, I do like the movie. I think the scene on Spawn Ranch with Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah.
All the mansion. Yeah. I think that was one of the best scenes in a film this year. But just too much Tarantinoism at the end just kind of left me with a sour taste in my mouth.
Okay.
Well, and there was a lot of setup. I mean, the stuff with his dog where he's teaching him how to eat in the trailer and making his craft dinner and stuff. You're like, why don't we just spend 10 minutes watching Brad Pitt make craft dinner or mac and cheese? And a lot of that is set up so that we can see him and the dog take action later on.
Yeah, training him for the big fight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys go on about Sharon Tate and have a lot to. I have to agree with it. She didn't. But I want to discuss one scene in particular.
Okay.
That scene when she walks in to see herself in the movie. That whole 5-minute interaction with the movie patrons, like the movie ticket seller and the guy opening the door, was absolutely brilliant.
And based on an event in Quentin's own life.
I did not know that, but that shot just blew me away. You do not see that shot in any other film. I've never seen that.
So her washing herself?
No, before that, when she's trying to buy the ticket and she's having that interaction. I love the way that was shot, and the guy just comes out that door, just slides
the
open,
doorman,
and he does the far shot. You don't see that in films because normally that's a cut shot and another cut shot. It's two cuts. And you probably didn't even got the doormat. You would just start opening the door. Quentin spends a lot of time on that. And I think that really helped me out. And I want to agree with you guys again on the shot when he goes to the camp where the Manson family lives. That big long shot when Brad Pitt drives in and he walks over to where Dakota Fanning. I mean, that is just beautiful shooting. You don't see that in any other kind of film. And I do have an issue with that. I do get the final third. It gets a little Tarantino, but I love that part. But I do find at times this film drags a bit here and there. It's like to get to the next scene. I think it needs a good 20 minutes, 25 minutes edited. I don't care where they take it from, but some of it needs to go. I love the scene when Caprio is talking to the chick from American Housewife, the little girl, Sophia Butter, dude, or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just Julia Butters.
Oh, my God. I thought that scene was brilliant.
And he's crying. And
Here we go, Leo. I think you won an Oscar.
Yeah, talking about in the story instead of his life instead.
Yeah. And I love I thought the Bruce Lee film scene was hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, Bruce Lee's wife Bruce Lee's daughter's all upset, but if you read his wife's novel, the wife said he is arrogant. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll let go either way. I could see where Doug had issues, but it's a Tarantino film, so I think that's just something he does at the end of the film.
I mean, I agree. They come back, it's a lot of voiceover, and it's edited in a funny way. It's too fast. We've seen all this slow build.
Yeah.
And then they're gone, and then they're back, and then it's boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Action. You know.
For me, the ending, I was, like, a little confused, because, like, I couldn't really, you know, for me, I couldn't really tell, like, oh, wait, so they're going to stop them, and then they're going to come back later that night?
Yes. That's what I was trying to figure out, too.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, is this a little anticlimactic? But then I was like, oh, it's just Tarantino changing history, which is, like,
right.
Like, okay, all this build-up to maybe see Sharon Tate.
Because I don't think that house exists in reality. I mean, the street is almost, but they've inserted that house at the base of the driveway.
Leo's house.
It wasn't there. So it's kind of like they're there, and that was the whole reason Brad Pitt had to go to the Manson family ranch, the Spawn Ranch, so they knew who he was. So when they saw that this is the house, isn't that... You know, what is DiCaprio's character? Isn't that where he lives?
Yeah.
Let's go back and take him out. And he's just by being there, he throws that roadblock to reality. Instead of them going up the road to kill Sharon Tate and her friends, they decide to take on the old aging TV star.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And, I buy that. Okay.
I love that bit with, that was, Uma Thurman's daughter.
She drives the car.
Goes by, And when she says, oh, I forgot my knife in the car.
Yeah.
I got to go back.
That's Uma Thurman's daughter?
Yes. Yeah. She sounds exactly like her.
She's a big character on season three of Stranger Things.
Yeah, that's why I know it sounds like her. As soon as I heard her voice, like, that's Uma Thurman's daughter. It sounds exactly like her.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a daughter, but, like, I saw her, and I was like, where have I seen you before? And then I was like, Stranger Things.
And that was a great moment, because in reality, it is the four of them. She was the one that was reluctant, and in the testimony for the Manson family stuff, she's the one who, she didn't participate in the killing, but she was still there.
Okay.
And she ends up turning evidence against the other three. So, you know, in this case, she's like, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, and if they're going to die anyway, she doesn't really have to be there to give testimony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have one question. Does anybody know where Kevin Smith's daughter was? She's in here somewhere.
She was at Spawn Ranch.
I never saw her. I did look for her, but she must have not had much to do.
No. I don't even know if she had a line.
Well, maybe that's why. Because I know what she sounds like. So I was looking for her. I thought maybe Doug would pick her out.
She was in Spawn Ranch. She was just one of the women gathered around when Brad Pitt was beating up the guy.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So all this talk about Kevin Smith going on about his daughter being the film, she doesn't do anything. Okay, got it. So she's nothing.
Yes, you want to see 1 minute of no dialogue in a 2-hour 45-minute movie.
Well, that's what I was confused. I was looking for it, and that's the only scene I thought she could have been in.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think we got to get props from Mark Arquely. I thought she did a really good job.
I love her, yeah.
She's fantastic.
And she's coming along greatly as an actor. I really see a lot of depth in her performance every time I see her, and I quite like her in films.
Yeah, have you seen her in the TV show The Leftovers?
I do not watch much TV, so I will say no and pass that off to Kevin. That's Kevin's
show.
She's
really good.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, she's fantastic in that.
Yeah, I agree.
And also The Nice Guys. The Nice Guys.
Yeah.
She was the
Forest Star.
Yes.
I still have to see Novitiate.
I've seen it.
Margaret Qualley was in the Forest Star. She was there near the end, right?
I don't remember. I've seen Novitiate.
Okay. Yeah, that one looks good. And it's kind of a funny, like, I don't really like Lena Dunham that much, but when she was like, oh, thanks for bringing Pussycat home. We love Pussy.
Yes, that was good. Yes, I recognize Lena Dunham, no problem. Okay,
but I loved it too.
Are we moving along? Anybody else? Nope. Okay, Aladdin,
starring Will Smith, Mena Massoud, Naomi Scott, Marwan Kanzari, Nazim Pedrad, and Billy Magnuson. Which one of us have seen it?
I have, Kevin has, you have, and I don't think Doug has.
No, I have not.
Okay, Aladdin. Okay, I gotta say, it didn't upset me as much as I think it should have. I thought the casting was spot on. I said everybody worked in the cast except for Will Smith. Who doing a Robin Williams impression, he doesn't have the energy. It's just not his thing, and it really comes across in this film. I really felt that's where the film lied, because he could not convince me he was Genie. Because, I mean, Robin Williams had lived his lines. Robin Williams just did it because he's Robin Williams, and that's what he does. Mm-hmm. And Will Smith is much more a method actor, I think, in that way, that he just reads the lines. And I really thought it lacked depth at times with him. I thought the songs were really meh. It didn't really do much for me. I thought the villain wasn't villain enough for me, because in the first film, he's villainous. I really believe Jafar is going to do what he's going to do. In this film, I never had any fear he could do anything. I thought the princess was okay. I thought she was the most interesting part of the character in the film. I thought she was the best. I thought her song was really lame. I thought the singing was kind of lame. The choreography was nice. But that's about it for me.
Okay, I liked Rose Smith's rendition of the genie. I thought he worked for me. I see what you mean about like doing like Robert Williams impression, but I think he was trying to make it his own more so. And I mean the songs weren't like his songs weren't that great. Like the Friend Like Me, and then like the Marching In. I forget what song that is, but like when they bring him to, when they bring
Princess
Aladdin.
Belly.
Yeah, thanks.
The Prince Ali intro song. Yeah.
That was just a bit, like, I felt the same way about, like, in Beauty and the Beast when they did too much of the Be Our Guest. That just went on too long. I thought Naomi Scott was great. But, yeah, about my biggest problem was Jafar. I think they ruined him. Okay, because, like, apparently for the original, they wanted to make Iago, the British, like, just calm one, and Jafar, like, really, really angry. And they did that for this one. And him just getting mad all the time because someone calls him number two was just too much. He just seemed really bratty to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I like this more than The Lion King or Dumbo.
I agree. I like them both, this one better than that one.
So I just watched this yesterday. Or Friday night, I think I saw it. So I'd have to agree with most of your points, both of your points. Jafar was weak. He wasn't villainous. He didn't have presence. I believe he was not a good guy. I mean, I believed he was ambitious. But, I mean, he just didn't come across as malicious and evil the way that Jafar does in the original animated film. So that, to me, weakened it a bit.
Yeah.
I thought they added a little bit more to the princess story where, you know, in the first one, she's like, I don't want to be a prize to be won. But in this one, she wants to be the sultan. She wants to eliminate male succession and allow herself to become the next ruler, which is an interesting addition and definitely of the moment. I think it was kind of a cool addition. And they also added a handmaid who wasn't in the original story. So yeah. It used to just be her and the tiger, and now she's got a helper. And that helper was an interesting – I've seen that actress before.
So have I.
Yeah. Okay. Your accent's bad if you've heard her, like, real voice.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Kevin. Yeah.
But she ends up being a love interest for the genie, which is an interesting angle. There was never any suggestion of the genie having a love interest angle in the original movie because he's just such a foreign entity. He's like a creature for, like, another type of animal. The genie, I got to say, he's not Robin Williams. No one can replace Robin Williams.
No.
But I thought he did an okay job. And I didn't have a problem with the songs like you guys did. I thought he did an okay job with Friend Like Me. He's a singer. Robin Williams isn't a singer, but he made those songs his own. But, you know, those are the lyrics that were written down. And he didn't ad-lib much in the lyrics to the song.
No.
It's just in his little nuanced performances. And there are things like, you know, I don't know. I didn't have that much of an issue. I thought it was good to get him out of the blue as quickly as possible and make him just kind of normal Will Smith so we could relate to him a lot better.
Yeah, because that CGI is bad.
Yeah. And well, it was better than it was in the trailer. The trailer was really rough. And so
okay.
They've obviously did quite a bit of work before it got to theatrical. So, I mean, overall, I expected to say I didn't want to see this, and I enjoyed it on some levels.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me want to replace the original, which I loved. But, you know, this is okay. Like, I think you could take your family to this. The kids may not have seen Aladdin before, and they would probably enjoy this film.
Yeah. I think it lends itself better to, like, a live-action remake than Dumbo or especially The Lion King. Because, you know, it's actually humans.
Yeah, The Lion King I have a lot of issues with.
Yeah. We won't get you started on those.
No, we did them already.
Yeah.
Doug!
Well, yeah.
Are you excited they're going to do Lady and the Tramp?
That one might be the most interesting one because I'm going to have to revisit the original because I don't remember it. So I think that might work. Doug?
Yes?
I mean, you have children and yourself. Do you guys have any interest in watching? Have your kids seen the original Disney? And
We've seen the original Aladdin. It's, I mean, we all love it. But none of us had any real interest in seeing the remake because it looked to be the same. Same thing with Lion King.
My kids have only seen the live-action Lion King. I did not take them. Somebody took them. Trust me. It was over. I did not want them to go. And they liked it. But I'm like, they've never seen the original. So I was wondering, because your kids are like me. They've seen the original. I don't want to see remakes of this stuff.
I will say, we are interested in the live-action Mulan, though.
See, I hate the original Mulan, so I'm hoping this one I'll like.
Well, what has Donnie Yen and Jet Li being cast in the live action, that has me excited.
You have me right there. Donnie Yen, Jet Li, I'm in. Two of my favorite actors.
And I don't think they have the little Eddie Murphy dragon sidekick in the live action one. Like, the live action one seems more grounded in, I mean, original's animated, but this one seems, like, really grounded and, like, really probably going to have a focus on the history of it as well.
Oh, I hope they go full, like, Kurosawa, just, like, giant action battle scenes.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see in Mulan.
Yeah.
Before we continue on to our next film, are we ever seeing a Shrek remake? Because I think that's got to be on the agenda.
For live action?
Not live action, just in general. I mean, they're rebooting all these properties.
There is a Shrek reboot on the horizon.
I love
Shrek.
Won't
be Scottish.
Just give me a sequel or a reboot. Because, yeah, like a Shrek live action, that would be like that Shrek musical, and that just looked ew.
Well, I've been to Universal Studios, and I got to say, I loved going to the Shrek cartoon. It made me laugh again. I love those.
Yeah, I really like the first and second one.
Okay.
For sure.
Did you have to crawl out of laughing out of Shrek, Daniel?
No. No. See, I don't know how to quip off of that. No. Crawl, starring Kaya, Scott Delario, Barry Pepper, and alligators. Or crocodiles.
Who cares?
I can't tell the difference.
This is a Sam Raimi film, too.
He produced it.
Oh, okay. Produced, not directed.
Directed by Alexander Aja. He did The Hills Have Eyes remake, I think. Yeah. Did you want to share with us, Simon?
I will start. I got a good story. I mean, as you guys know, and people listen to the show, I tweet every day at extrafeatures.ca. Extra Features on Twitter. I do try to, at least. Some days I do miss. I gave this film a 2 out of 10. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was silly. I thought they spent the whole time in that roof and I fell asleep. I thought it was just asinine, this film. It made no sense. The ending was dumb. These idiots running around and gators attacking them with horrible CGI looked terrible. I got ripped a new one on Twitter. I couldn't stop laughing. People are telling me this was the greatest film of all times this summer. And this is the best horror film to come along in ages. I'm like, people need to get out more.
I don't think it's the best horror film to come along in ages.
Oh, that's what they told me. Best horror film of the year. Quote.
That's what they said?
Yes.
Okay.
So, my thing is to them,
sorry, go ahead.
I just let me finish my rant. I'm saying to them, please watch other films. This is terrible. This is just bad filmmaking. It's a one-location horror survivor film that nobody needs to watch. When she's in the shower trying to escape the gator? Like, really? That was a terrible scene.
Okay, yeah, I'm definitely on the other side.
You like that scene?
Yeah, I thought it was a clever little getaway, you know, bringing him into it and then just jumping over the top.
I mean, this guy got hit by a beam at the beginning of the film, unconscious, and had to be dragged out. He's fine by the end of the film?
No, he didn't. I don't think he got hit by a beam. I think he got attacked by the gators.
Nope, because she finds him. There's no water near him.
Well, I think he got attacked, and then he got knocked out, and then he crawled away.
I highly doubt it, but okay. This film is boring. They have nothing interesting to say. Their plan is dumb. They got the idiot in the boat getting eaten alive by gators. Like, why do you? No gator does this.
Well, I mean, like, if you, I don't know, because they have a swamp in their backyard, and the gators get into their basement crawl space. So also called crawl because of the crawl space and the gators crawl. they got in through this like little vent or whatever it is, storm drain from the back. I thought it was like a, I liked it. I thought it was good.
Oh,
I thought
it was fun. Come on, Daniel, you live in a swamp. Wouldn't you have like reinforced your storm drain 15 years ago when you moved in? This guy's a handyman.
They haven't been there. They don't live there anymore. He's selling the place, and the deal went through.
Right, but he could have fixed it years ago. He's a handyman.
I think it might have – do you think it might have came loose in the hurricane?
I think I'm pushing hard for this film to make any sense to me. I
buy
just
the premise.
Found it so dumb.
I buy it.
I just wanted to get eaten alive. That was my whole plan. I would have been happy with this film.
That they would have got eaten alive?
I wanted both of them to die at the end of the film. You know, in those horror films where the last person always gets kidnapped or stabbed or the creature's coming up behind them. Nope, none of that crap here. I just didn't care. They kept talking and I couldn't stay awake. It was just boring as hell to me. Just another bad horror film.
I liked it. I thought I didn't mind the characters. I thought him being her coach and like the fact that she's a swimmer, like that's for, I thought that was kind of clever that like, okay, like she's familiar with this, that she has to swim fast.
But she can't out swim a gator.
No, I mean in the circumstances.
She can't outswim a gator. Sorry.
Well, okay.
Can't be done.
I'm just saying at the end she didn't have to. She swam to the boat because the hurricane was giving enough like cover, because if she did, they weren't splashing, but when it stopped, she was able to get a head start. If she has a head start, she can outswim the gator.
Sure. I think. I'm sure I could outrun a coyote if I had a head start by like 3 or 4 miles.
You know? But she was training to be an Olympic swimmer. Michael Phelps outswam a fucking shark, right? On Shark Week.
Yeah, okay. More nonsense. But okay, that's what we're comparing this to. Michael Phelps, swimming a shark during Shark Week. You can have your opinion, Daniel. I'll give it to you.
No. I'm just saying, like, stupider things have happened.
Ben Johnson raced a horse. Same argument.
No, I'm just saying it could be possible.
Like the Dolphins going to CFL. Like, does anybody care?
Or the Dolphins going to the Super Bowl. I believe them going to the CFL bigger than the Super Bowl.
That is true. Okay, we're done with Crawl.
No,
I'm done. Don't watch
it.
This film. Okay. Watch it if you're Daniel's type. If you like me better, don't watch it. You'll be happier.
If you like fun summer movies, if you like The Meg.
I hate The Meg too, so perfect.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just you usually get shark movies, you don't get a lot of gator ones. I thought it was fun.
Okay,
it's a good use of like one location horror.
Let's move on to the big movie of the summer.
Of the summer? I don't know.
Massive October release, because usually October, August. And August is usually a terrible month for films, always. I say this is the biggest one for the month, probably the only good one.
Well, yeah, the biggest of the month, sure. Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, if he still goes by that. I think it's just Dwayne Johnson, though. Jason Statham, Vanessa Kirby, Idris Elba, Helen Mirren, Isaac Gonzalez, and Cliff Curtis.
Doug, you're up.
I love this movie. It was absolutely everything I wanted from an action movie starring Jason Statham and The Rock. I had so much fun with it. I generally have fun with Fast and Furious movies, especially when they give the middle finger to physics, which particularly happened at the end when it was a bunch of trucks versus a helicopter. But I just had so much fun with this movie. I loved it. It was probably the most fun I've had in the movie theater this year.
Well, that just told me a lot about Doug's 14-year-old boy is still alive and kicking inside him. I think this is a perfect film if you're a 14-year-old boy. I think you absolutely love this film. I like the film for what it is. It's big summer dumb entertainment, and that's the only way I can describe it to anybody.
Yeah.
My major problem with it is I don't find The Rock and Statham's chemistry. It was good. I liked the banter, but I read that was ad-libbed a lot, and that worked. I thought the storyline was dumb.
Who cares?
I know. That's my problem. I couldn't turn my brain. I did enjoy parts of it.
Driving.
It's just big, dumb fun. That's the only way I describe this. I thought the scenes of the helicopter were hysterically funny and bad at the same time. Like, I'm like, okay, I gotta let this go. I thought Vanessa Kirby steals this movie from them. I really was impressed with Vanessa Kirby at the end of this film.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal job by Vanessa Kirby. I have no idea who she is, but she's on my radar now.
Yeah, she was in Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout last year.
Which I don't remember her being in, so I must have
some recollection she was, of who she was. She was the one that was, like, the liaison for, or, like, Tom Cruise finds her at, like, after the Halo jump down to the thing, wherever they go. Basically, she's in it. I can't remember which character. Like, the liaison for getting the villain from the movie before.
Yeah, I mean, I thought...
I'm not making any sense. Sorry.
I did love the scene with Idris Elba goes under the bus on the bike. The bike chase scene was amazing. Like I said, Doug says physics in this world don't exist. He's absolutely correct. There are no physics. I just had a lot of problems with the villain. I just didn't find him... I love Idris Elba. I just didn't find him interesting. Did you, Doug?
I mean, I have seen Idris Elba be incredibly charismatic in other things, though. He didn't have as much to do in this movie as I had hoped he would. But for me, the movie really rested on Statham and The Rock. And I think they pulled it off. I think their chemistry together was pretty good. And the action by David Leitch, he knows how to stage an action scene.
Absolutely, he does.
Yeah. Yep. I think the chemistry worked for me. It's just basically grown men throwing Yo Mama jokes at each other. And I think that's all it is. I don't think it works. Yeah, the villain, it's just Idris Elba being Black Superman, like he says. The way his, like, bike goes, like, yeah, like, going under the
double-decker bus. Going
under the truck, and then the bike coming back to him at one point. Like, I thought all those were cool. Near the end, like, when they're just all punching him, and they're like, oh, wait, we need to use teamwork to defeat him. Like, I don't know, I was just kind of tired by that point. But I think he worked as, like, a Terminator kind of character. Story-wise, it's just another genocide movie and replace people with, enhanced robotic versions of them. Because that's what the virus is trying to be released. I agree, Simon. Vanessa Kirby was really good in this. And she was in Fallout last year, like one of the bigger action movies of the summer last year. But this time she actually gets to kick ass.
Yeah, Doug, how do your kids, I mean, I think they're the age group for this film. Did they love this film like the same way my 14-year-old boy myself would?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I took them to the theater opening night. And we all left with a giant smile on our face, just wondering how the hell four trucks could take down a helicopter and then how people in the helicopter could survive the fall. We just had a blast with it. And if you really want to watch the ending in a new light, when they did the slow motion, it was a combination, I read, of actually, you know, slowing down the film. And some of it was pantomiming in slow motion. So if you want to watch The Rock, you know, just imagine him punching in slow motion and Idris Elba taking the punch in slow motion. Yeah. I find that hysterical.
Yeah.
That's good. Do you have anything else? We're moving on, right?
Kevin, did you see this?
No, he didn't.
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, one more thing. Oddly enough, one of my biggest issues were the two big cameos. I thought Ryan Reynolds was just trying really hard to be funny. And then the Kevin Hart, like, his character kind of serviced the film to get them to Samoa. But I thought he was just trying way too hard to be funny.
Because he's Kevin Hart, and that's what he feels he has to do. I like the, he always trying to be funny. I think that's my problem. I just, he needs a break. I need a break from Kevin Hart being Kevin Hart. He's becoming the Will Ferrell for me.
Okay.
Too much of him. Like, enough, enough, enough. Try something different.
Yeah, fair.
Okay, moving along. Perfection?
Yes, sir. The Perfection, starring Allison Williams, Logan Browning, and Steven Weber. I didn't really see any other big names in this.
Doug, you want to start?
I'll be honest. I'm not a big fan of rape being the big threat to female characters. I was turned off by this movie. I did not. I'm just not into that. It doesn't do anything for me. I don't find it empowering when women overcome that. I just find it creepy and disgusting. And honestly, that was that's my big takeaway from the film.
I have to agree with you 100%. Kevin, did you see this?
I did, yes.
Okay. I'll go Doug, and then we'll let Kevin go. I have to agree with your points 100%. I was probably a little bit more bored you were until we got to that scene. So I was on board for the first two-thirds of this film. Like, oh, I kind of liked it. It's kind of strange. Let's see where it goes. And then they took that turn you did, Doug, the same issue you had. I'm like, I'm done. That is dumb. I'm finished. That's your big turn. And, of course, they give me the shocking ending. But at that point, I was with you, Doug. I lost interest in the film.
Yeah.
It's like somebody had slapped me in the face. I'm like, you know what? I'm pissed off of this. It's been used too many times. You should have thought of something else other than, like, yeah, being a pedophile. I'm like, I don't care. You ruined it. I'm with you 100%, Doug. Kevin?
I really like this movie. I thought it was very inventive for a Netflix film. I like the structure of it. With and it was almost like an act structure, like act one, act two, act three.
Yeah.
It kind of subverted my expectations in most of those acts and making me think it was about something else. So, you know, here we have the main character is a cellist who left music to take after her mother, and it starts with a very creepy scene of her staring into the eyes of her dead mother for a long period of time. And I'm like, I'm not comfortable with this movie already, and I'm already liking that I'm uncomfortable with this movie. She flies to wherever
Shanghai.
In Asia, that's Shanghai, and she meets the protege who followed her, and she's trying to reconnect, and she connects with that protege, and then you think it's going to be a virus horror movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and I thought that was fantastic. Like, here they are in the middle of nowhere in China, and she's having this virus attack. And apparently the vomit has worms in it. They're coming alive. And she's infected with blood, with bugs. And then she's handing her a cleaver to cut off her hand and all that stuff. And I'm like, this is crazy shit. This is like Cabin Fever with virus horror. But it turns out it's all and then you rewind. And then we get it from the lead character's manipulations of giving her hallucinogenic drugs.
Yeah.
That she's manipulated her into thinking that she's infected with bugs.
Yeah, just her mom's pills that, like, they get, in the side effects of hallucinations, like nausea, get intensified if you take it with alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm fascinated. I'm where is this going? And then, you know, so your second act, the girl shows up. And she's the mentor. The mentor brings her in. The mentor rejects her, and then she goes to kill her. And you think it's going in another direction. And you think it's a revenge movie. And it sort of is a revenge movie, but then it goes into another direction. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of weird, and it was very creepy. that the Steven Weber guy, who was everybody's cellist mentor, is actually all about raping people who fail at music. And it wasn't that he did it because he enjoyed doing it. It was like he did it because they failed. In order to hit that perfect note, people needed like a reason or like something on the line.
Like
do this, we're going to rape you. Which is, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead. I was just going to agree, like, yeah, like the threat of getting raped, basically.
Yeah, which is creepy and unnerving and really made him the horror. Like, he's the monster of the film. So, I don't know, I like, and then they play him. I mean, I liked all of the actors. I thought everybody did a great job. I mean, rape is an uncomfortable subject as it is. But and when he brings the little girl in and she's worried about screwing up and what's going to happen when, what's this little girl going, all that stuff. I thought, are you still there?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. So I liked it. I thought it was original. For a horror movie on Netflix, I was shocked at how good I thought it was.
Yeah, like when she's playing and like the screen like has the edit that lets you know that she missed the note. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was well directed. Like I haven't seen a movie with like so many twists and turns that just subvert your expectation of what's happening. And it's like, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like, oh, is it a virus movie? Wait, no, it's a revenge movie. And yeah, I have to agree with, like, I really enjoyed it for how twisted it was. And like, when I thought it was a good job of like, doing horror, like when the Logan Browning was sick and she thought she was dying and puking everywhere, like that made me really anxious. And then Allison Williams gives the cleaver to like 127 hours her handoff.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't trust Allison Williams after this one and Get Out. Like, I have major trust issues with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like I enjoyed it, but yeah, I have to agree with, the rape, just it becoming a rape revenge story was kind of a turn off. Like, it's like a secret society, like almost like a secret society of like going, like through these like generations of just raping each other so you can get to the perfect note, the perfection. I thought they could have, like, you knew it was coming when she was like, oh, like I know what's happening now. They could have, yeah, they could have done something better, like something else, I guess. But I thought
it
was still effective and like, but yeah, it just turned into, turning into like a rape revenge story. It's like, everything about this is so unpredictable and so original that they're going this way. It's a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, and in a lot of ways, it reminded me of Get Out with a twist, where everybody in the house was in on it. And this whole thing that, you know, like if you screw up at this academy, this is what happens to you. Now, I assume that it doesn't matter, male or female, whoever it happens to.
Yeah, because it sounds like the headmaster got raped when he was a kid.
Because
he didn't hit that perfect note. But then, yeah, it being ingrained in him, he was able to. Yeah, but, like, that was one of the darkest endings I've seen, like, them playing the cello together because now they both only have one hand. Like, oh, shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was twisted, and they were doing a perfect concert at that point.
There were?
Yeah. Fuck.
Okay, you guys got 12 minutes. Take your poison.
You guys want to do Life After Beth and Detour then?
Yes.
Okay. Life After Beth, starring
Open the
Aubrey
vault.
Plaza.
Hold on. Open the vault.
I apologize. My bad.
Nobody has the movie I want.
Hey, if it's on video, Blockbuster probably has it. I mean, we have over 10,000 videos.
Wow.
Okay, Life After Beth, starring Aubrey Plaza, Dane DeHaan, and Molly, John C. Reilly and Molly Shannon.
I guess I'll start first. I enjoyed this film. I really do like this film. Is it great? Nope. It's very simplistic, very basic. Dave DeHaan is a terrible actor. I want that stated right now. I'm done. He is awful. But Audrey Plaza plays it so well. I thought John C. Reilly's parents. I like this film. It's made on cheap budgets. It kind of shows. I just like it. I really like it. I think it works on every level for me. I just find it fun to watch. And I mean, I love the Andrew Kendrick scene when she shows up. I think that works perfectly. And that's it. I think it's a very simplistic story to tell. I think you pretty much know the beat for beat that's going to happen. I just like it. That's to me, this is it just works for me. And I love the guy from Criminal Minds playing his brother. It just makes me laugh.
Matthew Gray's brother?
That's it.
Okay. I think the only time I've ever believed like Dane DeHaan was doing a good job was Chronicle, because I just love Chronicle.
I hate Chronicle.
I haven't seen this movie for a while, but I think I gave it I don't have a lot to say about it. I think I gave it a 6 out of 10.
That's what I'm giving it.
Unique premise for a zombie movie. I'm going to have to pull It Was Fine.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't know if you're allowed to do that.
I enjoyed it. I don't think I loved it. So, like, my 6 out of 10 is definitely different from yours, Simon. But, yeah. So probably, like, 4 out of 10 for your scoring.
Okay, well, I'm ahead of you. Doug?
I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, I watched it when I got really into Parks and Rec, and I just wanted to see more of Audrey Plaza, and I thought she was fantastic in it. I loved the scene with her tied to the air conditioning unit, I think.
At the end? I love it.
Yeah. The stove.
But hold on. Sorry to interrupt you, Doug. That is the weakest looking stove I've ever seen in a film.
She was amazing in it, and I just had a lot of fun with it. It's not going to change your life or anything, but it's a fun movie, and you could do worse.
I don't think you want this film to change your life. I think this film's just fun to watch. I think it would have done well on Netflix. If it even went directly to Netflix, we would have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think it's just a fun film to watch. There's nothing in here. I thought Andrew Kendrick plays her part perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, I need Dave DeHaan replaced, then I'll be fine.
I definitely do think it's better than the director's other movie, Little Hours. I definitely like this one better.
I agree.
I'll be honest, this one hit a little too close to home at the beginning. Dane DeHaan's girlfriend is dead and he can't deal with it. He thinks that she may be alive, and all that stuff. I don't want to get too personal, but my situation with Deborah, definitely that hit, very home. And, after she died, I thought that she was alive at different times. I kept thinking I had dreams where she was alive, where I would see her, even though I knew that wasn't the case. So to me, it was like, oh, man, this is a little too, for a comedy, this is a little too deep for me. The whole zombie premise to me was, I don't get it. It didn't make sense to me. She was bitten by a snake and died, but she comes back from the dead. Not because the snake bite was completely irrelevant. For some reason, people are coming back from the dead.
Correct.
And there's no reason given as to why they come back from the dead. It just, the exact night that she died, people came back from the dead.
Correct.
So that was, to me, that was weak. I would have liked to have had some kind of something happen that would cause for this to happen. Like a comet or something odd.
Fair enough. I don't think they had the budget for it to give us something.
Oh, well, they could have thrown something on the news in the background. It wouldn't have been that difficult.
Or an offhanded comment. Dave DeHaan said, well, it was a really strange night last night.
Or even whole town just being a pet cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I liked the brother. I thought that was a strange relationship there with the gun and all that stuff. And it takes some very dark turns when he comes back to his house and there's a guy in it.
Yes.
He doesn't know. And then all the burned corpses in the backyard. And he's like, oh my God, my whole family's been burned alive. Now what do I do? Well, guess I'll just give up, and then turns out they're all okay. But I don't know. It was okay. I mean, it was like I put it on par with that other zombie movie, Warm Bodies.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it better than Warm Bodies.
Yeah, he said I'd probably say equal.
Fair enough.
I think I enjoyed Warm Bodies more than this, but...
I think four or five. The Shakespeare one, wasn't it? Romeo and Juliet, Warm Bodies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a zombie and he comes back to life from meeting this girl.
Okay, we got 6 minutes. Are we going to detour?
Give us the info. Let's do it quick.
Go.
Tom Neal and Savage called Edrick.
Okay, Doug, your movie, go.
It's just a really dark film noir from a bunch of people I had never heard of before, but I thought it was very effectively made, just very dark, just to see how one man's life can turn on something so small as hitching a ride with another person on the way to California.
Okay, quick question. Why'd you buy this off the shelf?
I bought it off the shelf because I had heard about it on a podcast called The Movies That Made Me, done by Joe Dante. And this movie had been mentioned on that, and Joe Dante appears on as a talking head on one of the documentaries on the disc.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed the first half of this film. I got to admit, I really liked it. I thought the ending was a little curt, a little quick, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. I understood they ran out of money or something. I thought it was very simplistic in the second half. I got what they were going for, but I wanted more. I just wanted a little bit more direction in some way, but I never got it. I really felt that Lee could have left numerous times and should have called her bluff. Mm-hmm. But he never did.
I really wanted to see him get back with his girlfriend. But...
So did I. But I could see why he couldn't do that. But I felt kind of bad because he didn't do anything wrong.
No, I think if he had just been honest with the police in the rainstorm with what happened, none of the movie would have happened.
Exactly. But we got to have him make bad choices to have a movie. We know that.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think it's a movie you could seek out, make your own decision on. I mean, you got to really buy in, though, I think, at most times during this film. It's very slow moving. Done on the cheap. Oh, my God. Really cheap, this film at times. Use the same sets a couple times.
Yes.
The diner set? Yeah, I saw that like an hour ago. Oh, we're back to the diner. Okay. I'm letting this go. Dan?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, because you suck. Too busy watching Paddington 2 for the 15th time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did see it. Thanks. It's probably the most noirish movie I've seen. It hits all the right notes on a noir film. Psychological distress. Doing stupid things because you're worried about being caught. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Yeah, we're still
here. Okay. I like the cast. I didn't know, other than his love interest, who I know I've seen elsewhere.
Absolutely, you have.
And who was it?
Her name?
Yeah, do you remember the actress's name?
No, it's a blonde.
Anne Savage?
Yes. No, I think that's the other chick is Anne Savage. Keep going, I'll look it up.
Yeah. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. I'm thankful to Doug for suggesting we watch this, because I was not aware of this film. I thought, what a brilliant idea. The guy just kills a guy by accident, and then he's so afraid he's going to get caught for murder that he steals the car, steals his clothes, steals his money, and abandons his body on the side of the road, and
Claudia Drake.
Claudia Drake or Esther Howard?
Or Anne Savage's Vera, that's the bad girl. Sue Harvey is his girlfriend. Claudia Drake's his girlfriend.
Okay. Yes. But just like, and that woman, the Vera character,
she's just great.
Brutal.
Absolutely fantastic actress.
And gorgeous, and she could tell she just wanted to screw him.
Yes.
Oh, she was one of the best femme fatales I have ever seen in a noir film.
I agree. I'm on board with you, Doug. Okay, anybody got anything else before we wrap up?
Anybody buy anything?
Nope.
Okay. I bought the Hobbit trilogy on iTunes, and I bought the Majestic. I bought the Aladdins, and a couple other things, which I don't remember offhand.
Okay. We're out of here. If they make it,
we review it.
Fantastic. Have a good night, boys.
Night, guys.
Good night.
To contact us, please email at extrafeatures@gmail.com and join us at our Facebook page.